Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 194. My name is John. A black hole in a bottomless pit. I'm getting tired of all this bullshit. April 15th has come and gone again. It really is just like Christmas, but instead of Santa, it's a morbidly obese Uncle Sam, and you give him all the gifts. I promise you, as far as the tax man is concerned, it is better for you to give than receive. Yep, this time around, I'm talking about taxes. Let's start way back at the beginning. With the Constitution of the United States. Our founders just fought a revolution over King George's unfair and arbitrary taxes. They were rightfully suspicious of big government power, especially taxing power. So they built in serious guardrails. Article 1, Section 9 flat out said no capitation or other direct tax, unless it was apportioned by population amongst the states. I know, what does that even mean? Well, it means the feds couldn't just slap a tax on income or property however they wanted, and hit certain states or specific types of people like rich folks harder. Instead, they have to divvy up the total tax bill based on each state's headcount from the census. Like splitting a pizza, where every state gets a slice proportional to how many people are at the table, not who ordered the most toppings. It kept things fair, prevented targeting, and forced the government to rely mostly on indirect stuff like tariffs and excises. No picking winners or losers. The founders' idea was to prevent the feds from just reaching into people's pockets however they wanted. They wanted limited government, not an endless revenue hose. There was a temporary income tax during the Civil War, started in 1861 to pay for the fight. Got a bit graduated, but it sunsetted afterwards. Then in the 1890s, during the Panic of 1893, Congress tried a peacetime tax as part of the Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act, a flat 2% on incomes over about $4,000, which would be roughly $140,000 today. It was supposed to offset tariff cuts, but a guy named Charles Pollock, a regular stockholder with just 10 shares in Farmers Loan and Trust Company in New York, sued the bank to stop them from paying the tax and ratting out shareholders. He argued it violated the Constitution because it was a direct tax on property income without apportionment. The Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision in 1895, agreed. Chief Justice Melville Fuller and the majority said taxes on income from real estate or personal property were direct taxes and had to be apportioned by population. Exactly as the founders intended, the whole income tax part got struck down. Justice Stephen Field warned it smelled like class legislation that could tear at the Republic's foundations. Wonder if we have anything like that going on now. This Pollock case lit a fire under the progressives. They'd been trying statutory workarounds, but after this smackdown by the Supreme Court, they changed their tactics, pushing for a constitutional amendment instead of fighting the courts every time. No more half measures, just rewrite the rules. That brings us to the progressive era push for the 16th Amendment, These folks think populists and progressives in both parties, heavy on Southern and Midwestern Democrats like, well, Cordell Hull from Tennessee, William Jennings Bryan, the three-time presidential candidate who hammered the rich, and even some insurgent Republicans like Albert Cummins of Iowa. They were all fired up about inequality from industrialization and tariffs hitting regular folks harder. Their ideology? Ability to pay and soaking the wealthy to fund a more active government, regulating big businesses, helping workers, the classic collectivist dogma. The tactics were clever. They kept attaching income tax proposals to tariff bills, knowing tariffs were wildly unpopular because they jacked up prices on everyday goods. In 1909, during the Payne-Aldrich tariff debates, conservatives like Nelson Aldrich tried to kill the idea by proposing the amendment themselves, figuring states would never ratify it. Big mistake. Progressives built a coalition, framed it as fairness against the trusts, and it sailed through Congress. Ratified February 3rd, 1913, just weeks before Woodrow Wilson, of all people, took office. And they promised the moon. This would only hit the super rich, like 1% of folks. Never the middle class or working stiffs. It'd be modest, tied to emergencies, and replace those nasty tariffs. Wealth will bear its proportionate share, their platform said. The reality? It unlocked the floodgates. The 1913 Revenue Act started tiny, 1% on incomes over $3,000, about $97,000 in today's dollars, up to a top marginal of 7% on over $500,000, roughly $16 million today. And the average annual income back then? Around $1,200 a year for most Americans. So yeah, it really was just the top slice paying. But once the amendment passed, politicians discovered how easy it was to crank up the dial. World War I, the top rate jumped to 77% by 1918. The promises broken almost immediately, and the economy felt the drag. Higher rates meant less investment, more evasion. Fast forward through the twists. Rates came down in the 1920s under Harding and Coolidge. Top marginal to 25% by 1925. And what happened? The Roaring Twenties exploded. Real gross national product grew about 4.2% a year, per capita around 2.7%. Unemployment stayed low around 4%. Productivity soared with new tech, autos, radios, appliances. People invested instead of dodging taxes. Coolidge ran surpluses, cut spending, and paid down debt. That boom lasted through most of the decade until, yeah, you guessed it, the 1929 crash. Fueled by speculation, easy credit, and the Fed's mistakes, not the tax cuts themselves. Then the Depression hit. FDR hiked rates up to 79% by 1936. World War II pushed the top rate to 94%. Post-war, it stayed brutal, 91% through the 50s and 60s. But that being said, effective rates after loopholes were lower, and it hit few people, that highest bracket. But the bracket creep in the 1970s from inflation hammered the middle class. Then Reagan, in 1981, slashed the top from 70% to 50%, then to 28% by 1986 with simplification. Boom followed. 20 million new jobs. Real GDP growth averaging 3.5%. Unemployment dropped from over 10% post-recession to 5.5%. Inflation tamed. It wasn't perfect. Early 80s recession from Volcker's Fed fight on inflation, deficits grew because spending didn't shrink enough. But the expansion lasted through the decade into the 90s. What ended Reagan's growth? Later hikes under Bush and Clinton, plus the dot-com bubble and other cycles. The pattern, though, is clear. Lower rates on the productive side sparked growth that lasted years until external shocks or policy reversals. Today, the system's still progressive as hell. You know how the socialists are always ranting about how the rich should pay their fair share? Well, the latest IRS data from 2022, the top 1% earned 22% of all income. So their share is 22% of all income, right? They paid, though, 40% of individual income taxes, nearly twice their quote-unquote fair share. Hundreds of billions of dollars. The top 5% of all wage earners pay about 60% of the tax share. Top 25% cover 87% of the tax share. The top half, 97% of all the tax burden. The bottom 50% pay just 3% of all the taxes. Yet around 40% of the household, 76 million tax units, pay zero net federal income tax after credits. Many get refunds bigger than their withholdings. They're getting more back than what they put in. Look, I get helping folks, but it creates this weird split. The productive class funds the most, while a big chunk benefits without any skin in the game. And for the love of God, where does it all go? For the great Beatles song, Taxman, George Harrison included the lyric, "Don't ask me what I want it for if you don't want to pay some more." Even the quiet Beatle would be astounded at the way the nefarious government abuses our money. The federal budget is north of $6 trillion. T as in Tom, trillion. That's when the waste stories make your blood boil. Doge, you know, Elon Musk's efficiency crew, has already flagged over $100 billion in savings from contract kills, lease cuts, fraud deletions, and bloat trims. Real money clawed back. But the bigger picture? The GAO says improper payments hit $162 billion in fiscal year 2024 alone across 68 programs. And $2.8 trillion cumulative since 2003. The fraud estimates run as high as $521 billion a year. And Minnesota is a poster child. The investigations so far have uncovered billions. Some say up to $9 billion stolen from Medicaid, unemployment, housing services via organized rings. Programs ballooned suspiciously. One housing scheme went from $2.5 million to over 100 million, with the vast majority of them considered fraudulent. COVID fraud nationwide was hundreds of billions. The Pentagon fails audits with trillions unaccounted for. Duplicative job programs, failed green loans, foreign aid, black holes. If we'd prevented just that documented waste and fraud, the national debt nearing $40 trillion now could easily be $3 to $5 trillion lower, factoring in the interest we've paid on money that vanished. Trillions not borrowed, not compounding. Think about it. That's real relief on future taxes through deficits, not pie-in-the-sky promises. And again, that's only the documented waste and fraud. Imagine how much lower it could be if we uncovered it all. Remember, DOGE had barely scratched the surface. Now let me get back to some basics. What does the Constitution actually say the federal government is supposed to do? What are they allowed to do? Well, Article 1, Section 8 lays it out crystal clear. The enumerated powers. Congress can spend for the common defense and general but uniform welfare. Borrow money. Regulate commerce with foreign nations, states, and Indian tribes. Naturalization and bankruptcy laws. Coin money. Post offices and roads. Promote science via patents. Set up inferior courts. Punish piracy and high seas crimes. Declare war. Raise armies and a navy with limits. Call up militias. Govern D.C. and federal properties, and make necessary and proper laws to execute those. That's it. That's the list. Defense, basic infrastructure like post offices, courts, currency, patents, war powers, no massive entitlements, no education bureaucracy, no endless agencies micromanaging your life. All that, the rest of the stuff, states, cities, families, individuals. That was the deal. Limited federal role to protect liberty. If we stuck strictly to those things, what would the budget look like? Well, defense is the big one, maybe $900 billion today for a strong military. Courts, patents, post office, mostly self-funded, coinage, tiny in comparison. The total would probably run under $2 trillion tops versus the $6 trillion monster we are looking at now. Everything else, welfare, education, corporate subsidies, belong at the state level, where it's closer to the people and easier to hold accountable. We have wandered so far from the original blueprint. And don't get me started on the politicians who run this shit show. Some have been in D.C. for decades on a $174,000 a year salary. Yet, their net worth explodes. Nancy Pelosi started with modest means, now worth over $200 million. Stock trades that somehow beat the market while she writes the rules as part of the legislature. Chuck Schumer, 40-plus years in, multiple properties. Mitch McConnell, long-timer. Wealth jumps suspiciously. Even folks who rail against the rich, like Elizabeth Warren or others like her, Their net worth climbs while they push bills to soak the wealthy, but they carve out loopholes that conveniently help insiders or their donors. They vote for tax code complexity that lets them game it legally. Insider info on legislation, sweetheart deals, family gigs. If the average citizen did half that, making trades with non-public policy knowledge or exploiting loopholes that they helped write, it'd be criminal insider trading or fraud. But for them, business as usual. Makes you wonder, is the system rigged so the game masters always win, no matter how much they preach fairness? No, it doesn't make you wonder. It is rigged. And this all circles back to a deeper question some, like me, call the libertarian view. Is taxation theft? I know that's harsh words for some people to hear, but think it through without slogans. If you own your body, then the fruits of your labor and risk, the sweat and ideas your body produces, should belong to you entirely. Taxation isn't voluntary charity, no matter how much the politicians want to try to make you believe it. It's the government taking a cut by force, finding as many ways as possible to bleed you dry. Taking 100% of your labor is called slavery. At 37% top marginal, plus payroll, state, etc., it's partial slavery. Government claiming ownership over a percentage of your time and output. The percentage you pay in taxes is the percentage of time you work each year for politicians and bureaucrats who see you as nothing but a resource to be exploited, identified by a number on a spreadsheet. I would even argue that the percentage you believe a person should be taxed is the percentage you feel slavery is acceptable. Pre-1913, the feds funded that small list of Article 1, Section 8 duties mostly through tariffs, excises, and land sales. Visible, indirect, and limited. No direct grab from your paycheck. No massive IRS tracking every dollar. That kept government small, as intended. The original design wasn't zero taxes forever, but no permanent federal income tax machine funding unlimited stuff. We should at least be open-minded to dialing it back, even considering no federal income tax at all. Funding only the enumerated powers via tariffs like the founders did. Growth would explode. Waste would shrink because there'd be less to steal. And liberty would breathe again. It's not radical. It's returning to what worked before politicians exploited the nation's producers to bleed them of their life's work. I mean, the top already pays the lion's share. Millions pay nothing. Waste is criminal. And we've strayed from the Constitution's intent. Maybe instead of fighting how much somebody should pay, it's time to demand stewardship first. Cut the bloat. Simplify. And remember, we own our own labor. It seems like such a foreign concept because for over 100 years now, we've just accepted it as part of life. But I'm asking you to just consider this. Taxation is theft. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.